And welcome into the inaugural Tony Talk podcast here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Fox 2 Sports Director Martin Kilquin with the Hall of Famer, Tony La Russa, third winningest manager of all time. And with that, he's going to think every week now I'm going to say something nice about him. And I heard this from Gary Pinkel when he retired at Mizzou. I did a long interview and he said, boy, you're a lot nicer to me now that I retired. What happened when I was managing and coaching back in the day? But I think people would be surprised, not only the relationship we have, but the personality and the connection you have with a lot of folks, because they saw you on TV and you always seemed grumpy. Well, you were grumpy a lot of nights, but I'm going to hopefully show people that there's a different side of Tony and that you have a lot of fun. But with that said, I want you to bust on me as much as possible. Are you okay with that?
Well, I understand that. I don't agree with Gary. I think you've been every bit as disrespectful and mean to me since I retired as when I managed. But let's get to that grumpy part. You know, the thing I've tried to explain to anybody, if you care like I think anybody would, if you're the manager of a team, head coach of a team, and if you care, you're into that competition, right? When the game is over, especially if you get beat, but even if you win, you know, your emotions are raging and you need to breathe. So if those post-game conferences were an hour later where you had really been able to settle down, but within 10 minutes you got to be out there. So there's no way that you can be, unless you don't care, that you can be real affable and, hey, what's the big deal? We got beat again.
Wasn't there one year where Elaine said, all right, you got to cheat. I've been watching you, and I'm sick of watching you. And maybe not those words, but didn't she get to you at one point and say, lighten up, Tony?
Well, she said that, you know, you've got to have more patience, because she reminded me of a great lesson when I first started managing the White Sox, Bill Veeck. I was a young guy, you know, and if a decision didn't work, it was my fault. And then it's okay. And, you know, so I was kind of being resistant to the media. And he called me and he says, Tony, you got to understand, it's the media, and we're lucky they cover us, and they're the conduit to the fans. So just remember, when you're talking, rather than get resisting and be mum and don't share, think about giving the fans something good about our team. We just lost 4-2, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. So. And also the players listen. So she reminded me of that. And I think most of the time, I remember that the media had a job to do. I'll give you a great example. That now that I've come over the years, you watch Bill Belichick's interview and the press conferences. I mean, he doesn't give anything. He's real quiet. He's just serious.
I got to tell you, you were never that boring.
That's a great comment, because if you get to know Bill Belichick and you go out with him socially, he is the least boring person you're ever going to meet. He has got so much personality. He's funny. He's engaging. He wants to know more about you than him. So my point is the post-game interviews, those are tough to handle. I know Mike Matheny they said a lot about that. He wasn't as ha-ha. The guys are ha-ha making jokes after the game. You got to wonder whether they care enough. And I wouldn't want that kind of manager.
When I would find out more, though, about – you, there were different instances. So I'd be on a Rams charter, and the women working the charter said, oh, we do the Cardinal flights as well. And they said, there is nobody with better manners than Tony La Russa. And in fact, if he sees his players not having good manners. So that's a lot of stuff that people at home don't know. But I always got that sense, too. That was your mom and dad. Like, you were big on manners, and as much as it's fun and these guys make millions, they stepped out of line, you were kind of on their ass.
Yeah, that's one thing I do think too, Martin, that over the 16 years, a lot of the guys like yourself, you know, the writers that cover it, other TV, you know, they knew there was more than just the way I would respond post-game. You know, I understand people, I respect people, I respect what they're doing. And one of the things that was a trademark, I mean, I'm a good student, and my mentors would say, you know, when you're the manager of a team, and you can ask anybody, clubhouse guys, the flight attendants, we never let anybody disrespect somebody that's working, you know, high-powered player, come in there with arrogance, you know, and try to act like he was the big shot, and they were not, just was not allowed. And it was just a part of our philosophy, and everybody adopted it because it was the right thing to do. So that's something that you were taught. But socially, man, I like to have fun, and I don't know if I have a good sense of humor now, but I like good humor. I laugh at their good humor.
Tony Talk on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, presented by Greenville University. They were founded in 1892, less than an hour from St. Louis, a renowned institution and not just a liberal arts school, but also a pre-med program, online program. And we're going to get Tony to meet some of these folks. Interesting, there's an older gentleman named Ish Smith, who was the baseball coach at Greenville, who later became the head of the International Baseball Congress. He would travel to Cuba, meet with Fidel Castro. And this is going back, your heyday in the 80s, Ronald Reagan wanted baseball back in the Olympics. And he writes a letter, gives it to Bowie Kuhn, and Ish Smith from Greenville University in Greenville, Illinois, goes to Korea with Bowie Kuhn with this letter from Ron Reagan saying, well, you better bring back baseball. All of a sudden, 84, you might even been there. It was at Dodger Stadium. They had the exhibition at that point. I'm going to get you to meet Ish Smith. Fascinating people. We love Greenville and all the work that they do with their students, but also helping out people in St. Louis. When Rankin Tech was having some issues, they said, students needing a place to go, make sure you check us out. It's greenville.edu for more information. Also, Marie Davila, Senior Living, and this one should be close to Tony's heart because your buddy Red lived at Marie Davila for many years. And on top of that, he helped get that thing started. His friends started it in 1960. He was on the original board of directors and then lived there for many years. And it gives me a good opportunity to ask you about your friend, Red. I know we still miss him. And it's amazing. It doesn't matter how long someone lives. When they pass, it's still too soon. That was somebody really early on you connected with.
Well, you just mentioned, you know, anybody that's got a great name like Ish, I've got to meet him with the story about baseball with Cuba. But you bring up Red, we called him the beloved Red Shandies. And there wasn't anybody in baseball that was more respected and loved than Red. The only one I can think of is a guy named Roland Heeman, who was my first general manager. But over the years, I've said many times, you know, the relationship with Jack Buck, you know, Mike Shannon's been great to me, the players, the Hall of Famers. But the one that Stan was wonderful. He'd come into my office. Knew my dad was a big fan, and he'd call your pop, and I'd call my pop, put Stan Musial on the phone, and my dad would just be speechless. So the number one guy was Red, and for all the right reasons. He did so many things over the years to prove how his interest in the game, his love of people, his respect for the organization, and I'll give you an example. And not to disrespect most of the Hall of Famers that would come to spring training. You know, their thing was you – sign some autographs after five innings, you know, you don't have to hang around. Red stayed for nine innings every game. When the game was over, he wouldn't say a thing unless you asked him, and he was always watching, had an intelligent comment. So my best memory, because it's a National League team and pitchers take batting practice, home games, I would stay in left field during pitchers batting practice. The position players would be stretching, and Red and I patrolled left field, and those experiences, day in and day out, talking to him about what happened in the game that just happened. We'd play this fungo game, trying to hit the ball back to the screen. Just seeing the beauty, the heart of this man, is my very best memory of St. Louis. And there isn't anybody that I miss more than Red.
And folks who were real close to Red, Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan, and they still run Marie Davila along with their sons. It's a beautiful West County campus. They've got senior living, independent living. The villas where Red lived for many, many years. Schedule a tour. Go online to mariedavilla.com. That's M-A-R-I-D-E, Villa, V-I-L-L-A.com, mariedavilla.com. We continue Tony Talk here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com as we visit its opening day in St. Louis. When you came here from Oakland, I'm sure you had an idea of what St. Louis and baseball was all about. What changed over the years? Give me an idea of what your impression was and then how it formed over those years.
Well, I'll give you a quick reminiscence, and that was I was born and raised in Tampa, Florida. The Cardinals trained in St. Pete with the Yankees back in those days. The White Sox and the Red Sox and the Red Legs, they trained in Tampa. So my dad, who was a huge baseball fan, got me started in this thing. The only day off was Sunday, and we picked St. Pete or Tampa. So I remember seeing the Cardinals, that beautiful uniform, and, you know, those days, you know, Stan was there, and I mean, it was a great franchise with the Yankees. So then I get into baseball, and probably my strongest memory were the three World Series. I was in the American League, 82, 5, and 7. You know, we had always been taught you represent, and you congratulate the winners of the two leagues. So I always showed up. And seeing World Series baseball in St. Louis, the passion, I think the joy of the fans, as you're walking around, you know, nobody knew me. I walk around trying to get to the park. And people are laughing, you know, and just enjoying the fact that their team was in the World Series. And I was like, man, this is neat. And then they had the pageantry before the game started. And I remember that. And I thought, man, this is special. But I was never really ready for opening day in 1996. And ever since then, you know, the way they trot out the history with the Hall of Famers, I love the Clydesdales. I think they do the very best because it's very important to, you know, whatever you're talking about that year and the future, you need to tie it to your history, especially the history of the Cardinals. So I was blown away every year. Every year I used to tell the players, I said, they're the two toughest games for us to play are Family Day, when you're out there playing around with your kids, and then you got to play a competition and opening day because you're going to be so distracted by the wonderfulness of this uniform. But let's use it as a motivation to not let anybody down.
It's got to make you feel – gratifying is probably the wrong word, but you come back now, and you never miss it. And we used to say, wait, he works for Arizona. He works for Boston. What the? You won't miss it. I know that. And you get a huge ovation. This fan base, they love Tony La Russa. Wasn't always that way. You kind of won the war, I would say. And it's got to be – there were some tough moments. Is it more gratifying because you went through those tough moments? I mean, I guess it'd be nice to be loved from day one. I'm not sure what the question is, but I think you know what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, I know, except, you know, when you know what's here, and I had learned what was here, the adoration Cardinal Nation has for that team. And therefore, anybody that represents that team, you know, you're on the coattails. Well, when you're the manager, you know, you've got a special responsibility. Just get it out. Let's get some wins out of this team. And I was fortunate that in the very first year, 96, we got to the playoffs and almost got to the World Series. But there were some lean years afterward. 97 was not a good year. 98, you know, Mark was amazing. 99 was bad. And I know there was some rumblings, you know, he's an American. I remember telling my friends in that first spring training, even in the clubhouse, there's such a National League preference for their style of play that it's almost like my 16 years in the American League, I was a minor leaguer. I mean, you had to prove it. So I could understand it. And then the one that and I totally understood it, that, you know, Whitey was such a iconic figure. He's from the area. You know, everybody knew him. They had those great years where they went to the playoffs and went to the World Series. Well, I'm not, you know, I'm totally 180 degrees on the other side of Whitey. I live in California, you know. I hug trees and I kiss Bambi, you know. I mean, that stuff was different. But it was rough because I wasn't Whitey. I'll never forget, I did an interview one time and they said, well, you know, you're from California, you know, people are going to have to be slow to embrace you. I said, well, I understand that. Well, Willie McGee's from California. He said, well, you're not Willie McGee. I said, you know, I know that too. But, you know, I think somewhere around 2000 when we started playing better, you know, people started maybe, hey, maybe this guy's an asset, not a liability. But I think probably more than anything, that's a 2002 season, what we went through, you know, and you could tell all our club, including the manager, we were just stunned by Jack's death and Darryl's death. And somehow it's one of my favorite teams of all time, hung in there to get into the postseason. So from then on, the nice thing is that once you're part of the family, then there's nothing like it.
It's Tony Talk here, and we've got our own conversation. But each week, we're going to go into the mailbag. We're going to let – because Tony was always great at wanting to know what the fans were thinking. It's TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. Fire away each week. We'll grab a few out of the mailbag. Tony, be respectful, of course. TonyTalk@gmail.com. Also, sponsors available. Send us a note at TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. Making headlines this week, Albert Pujols, who has been relatively quiet, I'd say, since he left St. Louis, coming back this summer in his eighth year with the Angels, first time back, and there's a lot of buildup for the weekend series of the Angels in June, did a sit-down interview with Graham Benzinger and basically said, listen, their offer wasn't great and I didn't want to get on my knees. I'm paraphrasing loosely here. But there was also something in the piece where you kind of felt like, had you still been here, you left at the end of 2011, Albert ends up leaving after 2011, had you been here, what do you think would have been different?
Well, the comment that I made in that interview was something that I said privately to others. I had and still have an outstanding relationship with the DeWitts, and I had an outstanding relationship with Albert, and I felt like I knew that Albert really didn't want to leave unless it was obvious that he should, for whatever the reasons. And money wasn't going to be the biggest thing. And I knew that I knew what Bill especially had talked many times about the history of the organization. And Bill DeWitt understood what Albert would mean being a Cardinal for life. So I felt, and they had some differences, no doubt about it, as it turned out, it didn't work out. I felt because I was connected to both of them in a respectful way, that I might have been able to push Bill a little farther and push Albert a little farther. But in the end, you know, the way that it worked out, as you know as well as anybody, Martin, you know, I've come back to town a bunch of times, and whenever I have an opportunity, my message is don't blame the Cardinals. It's the way of doing business today. You're seeing more and more players that should be franchise players are no longer with the franchise. But also, please don't blame Albert, because I know Albert was willing to take less money to stay here, and it hurt him to leave. But he's a prideful man, and Dee's a prideful woman. And when they felt like they were at first not being respected, you know, that it was hard to overcome that.
Is that human nature? These are highly competitive people. That's why they're successful, and they're, you know, tremendously talented. But then they get into these negotiations, and I feel like they dig in a little bit, just like they're at the plate. Like, oh, yeah? Oh, really? That's your offer? Okay. Like, I feel like during negotiations, maybe they just kind of got sideways, and there was no way to come back. Is that fair?
Well, I do think that's fair, and in the end, you know, human nature is a strong part of everything that happens. It just so happens that Albert has one of the toughest, most respectable human natures. I mean, his base, whether it be the religion or his commitment, which is a promise that he makes to his family, to the game he pursues, is so strong that if he feels slighted, you know, this is not a guy shows up, hey, what's happening? Everything's okay. Well, you know, that guy's, I don't care about that. Well, Albert cares. And so I think it hurt him more than it would hurt other people. And rightfully so, because he's shown that he gets deeply into things, and the cut on him is going to draw more blood than it would with some guys that just get in there superficially.
And when we come back, it's a Friends of Tony update along with Redbird Roulette. Since 1960, Marie de Villa offering senior living in West County at the corner of Clayton Road and Wideman Road. Perhaps you've driven by Marie de Villa. You've probably seen the fountain. During Cardinal playoff runs, the fountain is red. The Blues playoffs, you can bet that the owners, Fred and Mary Kay, make sure the fountain is blue. They're also big with the Town and Country Parade. They love to get involved. And really, all the folks that are living at Marie de Villa Senior Living, get involved. There's a lot happening on that campus, and that's exactly what it is. It's a campus. They offer independent living, assisted living, the fine villas that you can check out. Best thing to do, schedule a tour, whether it's for yourself or your parents. Find out more at mariedevilla.com. Get signed up, schedule a tour. Red Shandy's called it home for many years. You can schedule that tour by simply going to mariedevilla.com. Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University, founded in 1892. This liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community. A great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution. All right, each week, in addition to your questions at TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com, a couple of quick segments, a Friend of Tony update, because you seemingly know everyone. First, I was thinking your guy Bob Knight, his disciple, Chris Beard, is Texas Tech, has them in the Final Four. I've seen some quotes this week from the general. What's he up to these days? What's Bob doing?
Well, mostly, you know, he was a great friend of our team, well, with the A's and then the Cardinals. He loves baseball. He had a love of baseball back when he and Sparky were great friends. He followed the Reds all the time. So I talked to him. At this point, you know, he hadn't been to spring training the last few years that I've been. Came to Arizona a couple of times, but he hadn't been to the last couple, and then he hadn't been to Boston. But mostly he's fishing. He lives in Lubbock. He still follows the game very closely. And, you know, things that you're seeing now that I would always take pains to explain about Bob never cheated. Bob will not abide coaches that cheat or programs that cheat. I mean, you want to get him started, and he will not forgive somebody that has cheated. So he had, even though he was rough and cruff, and you know, in those days, I mean, I've heard Mike Krzyzewski say, you know, sometimes you got to get upset, you know, you got to get their attention. Bob was had integrity in the program, and the kids graduated, and he stays very close to his players, which I think speaks volumes of who he is. And at this point, he watches. I talk to him maybe once every 2 or 3 months. He knows what our team is doing. But mostly he's just fishing. He's not traveling much.
Sources have indicated you ended up at a dinner with Howard Schultz. It's not a political take, but how do you end up at that table? What's that like?
You know, everything, a friend of Tony is the fact that I was around forever. You know, I mean, I managed 30-plus years, but it also, I would say sometimes I want to pump myself up and say I was a mediocre player. I was actually worse than that for 16.
I've seen the stats.
Yeah. Let's not talk about them. But in all those years, you run a lot of people. And if you ask me how this person or that person became a friend, well, in Howard's case, it was Mark McGuire. Mark is extremely superstitious. In 98, he had gone to 4 or 5 games without a home run. He went to Starbucks, drank coffee, hit a home run, and then all he started drinking Starbucks. And he made a comment like that. He went to the World Series, the Padres that year, against the Yankees, and he had a Starbucks hat. And Howard noticed it, so he made contact. And he said, you know, they got to know each other. He said, well, you ought to meet our manager because he's really into a lot of things. And so from 98 to now, you know, we've been really good friends. And, you know, and I know that he's considering whether he's going to run for president. So I met it. Just so happened we were playing the Yankees during spring training, and he was in town. So we went to dinner at this famous Cuban restaurant. And I think he'd be a great president because he's really a great man, and he's got great background, but he's an independent, so we'll see how that goes.
I got to give you a homework assignment, too. Next week, I want you to find out if this is true. There's a story I saw. Bruce Hornsby, another friend of Tony, beat Allen Iverson in one-on-one in basketball. I don't know where this – if you could, look that up for me. Our other segment each week is going to be Redbird Roulette, quick thoughts on two former Cardinals. And I'll try and grab somebody obvious and somebody a little less obvious. And just give me kind of your blink when I say their name. So Taguchi.
One of our, not just my, but our favorite players of all time. So came in, very, very intelligent, very much a team man. You know, the style of playing Japan is to be emulated. They practice, very strong, fundamental, team. But he had this personality where he just was a magnet for guys, do anything for the team, great personality. And we had this, I'll tell you very quickly, we had this one time, it's famous in our coaching circles. Jim Leland at that time was between jobs and Walt hired him as a scout, and he would come to spring training. So we were formulating the team. The last day was like, you know, you got a name. It's like three guys, you got to pick the guy. And I asked Walt, just come to us last. So as we went around, guys say, I want Martin or I want Ben. And when we got to Jim and I both stood up, he says, oh, it's so man. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So Taguchi to this day is just a beautiful guy with his wife and he was exactly what the Cardinals were all about.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun. And he loved Ted Drews. I did a story with him at his home in Clayton, and his wife said, Tamiko said, oh, we go to Ted Drews. I'm like, this skinny little guy's eating Ted Drews like twice a day. All right, less obvious, Pat Henkin. And the only reason I bring it up, it's kind of my personal question, because that jersey always hung behind your desk. You probably told me, but I've already forgotten why.
I used to have, it's something I just did, you know, our style as a coaching staff was to create close relationships, you know, the brotherhood, the family. We did it from Chicago, Oakland, St. Louis. And when you had some player that really embraced it and was the kind that would take that message, you know, you can't win nowadays unless you have a clubhouse help. I don't care who the coach is or the manager. You better have some team leaders. McEwing, I had his spikes because he was a great ambassador to what we try to do. Well, Pat Henkin came onto our ball club in 2000 when we turned it around, and he and Daryl Kyle and Andy Bennis, I mean, they got the thing started, and sure enough, here comes Rick Ankiel. But Pat was the perfect kind of teammate. leader when he pitched, competitor when he wasn't. He's out there to do everything he could to get help the other guys get better.
We'll be here each week with some baseball conversation with the Cardinals Hall of Fame manager, Tony La Russa. Again, brought to you by Marie Davila Senior Living, Greenville University, and also our friends at ARF, the Animal Rescue Foundation, arflife.org. In coming weeks, we'll get more from Tony on events they have going on. They're doing a lot of great things, pets with vets. And next week, we'll get into Paul Goldschmidt, what Tony saw of him in Arizona, what he expects in St. Louis, and also that relationship with Mike Schilt. And I'll finish with this, Tony, just so you know, all the years that I imitated you, I was never making fun of you. That's a form of flattery, just so you know, okay?
Well, I would have taken it as flattery if you sounded more like me. You made me sound like Rudy Cazzuti or something. It was just terrible.
Who's Rudy Cazzuti?
You got to be older like I am to know that goes way back.
All right, that's Tony.
You heard Johnny Carson? What? Okay, I'm just...
I will look it up. This is not Ask Tony. It's Tony Talk here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com.